It's the Tiltcast, episode 352. He's in the med.
And this week, guys, we talk Shadow of the Tomb Raider, the Shortest Trip to Earth, Spider-Man, and Bard's Tale 4. Stay tuned.
Really likes the cold.
Huber.
Turkle mode. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, we're back. It's the Tiltcast.
Sponsored by Rockstar. Not really.
Not really. We can't claim that. Right now, today is October 12th in the year of Cthulhu Jesus, 2018. And we're back. We had to skip last week, but before we get started, I'm going to kind of just make some introductions. I'm Nos.
I'm Jason.
I'm Matt.
And Matt's here after 4 years.
Yay!
Rusty is out in the great... What part of the mitten is he in? Is he in the glove or is he in
he's in the penis. He's a youper right now. He's up in the penis. He's a youper.
The Michigan penis. So he had when he says he had an opportunity, I assume that work had the ability to let him off for 2 weeks or something like that.
Yeah. And keep in mind, he's like one of two overnight guys. So for him to take time off means that the mid-shifter has to have the availability to go work overnight while he's gone. So, yeah. So apparently everything aligned magically in a Ghostbusters kind of way.
Yeah, and I think it's good for Rusty. So tonight, for those of you who don't know, we do some prep and we have to figure this stuff out. And last week definitely wasn't working. And we weren't really prepared for it, but we want to make sure that Rusty gets his family time in. So this week, we're recording, and you'll probably won't hear the recording until much later after Rusty gets back.
Pretty much.
You'll see tweets and things like that well before this episode is up, talking about what's going on. But Matt has been a very long-time friend of mine for 16 years, probably.
Roughly.
Yeah.
Roughly,
yes. Since we were just... I was barely not a teenager, and Matt was already almost a grandpa, so...
Close enough, yes.
So for those that don't know you, Matt, you have like 75 children, right?
Give or take like 90.
90?
90. Like, and one grandchild.
Right, and you do have a grandchild, and you're 30 what?
Eight.
So people do the math.
Yeah.
He started early. Matt understands how science works.
Yes, very much so.
He's not Catholic, surprising. But he fucks like a Catholic.
Yes. The best part is my grandson is a year and a half younger than my youngest daughter, and she is 5.
Oh, my God, dude.
So you're not a new grandpa.
No, he's been around for a while.
Dude is 3 years older than me and fucking has that many kids.
Yeah, you're only 1 year older than me?
No, two.
You're 38?
I'm 38, yes.
Oh, yeah, and I'm 36. Yeah.
You and Peters are the same age, so.
That's right. Yeah, so to kind of further the history without just making this way too inside, I mean, me and Matt have worked together. We've gamed together in all forms.
Yes.
From tabletop to board game to...
World of Warcraft.
For a very long time.
The devil. Forever.
Me and Matt played World of Warcraft like a second job for a while.
Yes.
I say that because I know it irritates Matt.
Yes. Yes. the way it's working out today, like, I'm not too high on it too much.
Any longer?
I jump on for the expansions and bounce off about 2 months later. So I've already canceled this go around.
Oh, for your sub?
Yeah.
Right on. So I'm not going to completely dive bomb you, but I do want to talk about some things. And then we'll kind of jump around. Normally I ask people, well, I should back up a little bit. This is throwing me off because everything's different today.
It's all different.
For those of you that don't know, we are a video game podcast, and we're going to talk about some general bullshit for a little while, and we're going to talk about some video games. And we're going inject our own version of humor, and we're not political, but we don't really make jokes about anything that's, in general terms, fucked up in a way that's racist or homophobic, but
at least not recorded.
Right. But anything else is pretty fair game.
Yes.
I mean, so
we've only talked about murder, real dolls, and dragon dildos. So
yeah, so we venture into that realm.
There actually, what is it, Houston? they're actually proposing laws because actually is a real doll brothel down there, and they're trying to make it to city ordinance to keep it from happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard about that, and they're trying to define if it's sex or not.
Yes.
Because you can masturbate in a private place. I mean, they have, what are those bars? It's not a bar, but it's like adult theaters for the longest time had like private booths so people could jerk it. And I don't see a problem with it. Like, not that I need any of this, but I mean, there are lonely people out in the world. They provide a service. I mean, don't get too fucking uptight. Is it a little bit weird? I guess.
No, because sometimes you need that. You've done it enough. That from you need my experience, sometimes you need that little thrill of being in public. I'm not confirming nor denying whether I've done it at work or not.
Do we break out the example? So how do you, Matt, how do you know this? Is this like,
I'm not
fucking on the side of the road? I don't.
We've already established I have lots of sex, so you have to do things.
You know, I'm glad. It's good.
You did it however you can.
Yes. I mean, you've been married like 10 years now or something like that?
No, we've only been married a few years.
You've been with your wife for
5 years, but we've been together like 10 years. So,
yeah, but in general, I don't know where the fuck this is going. I don't even know where to take it.
This is half our conversations. Dude. Anywhere, anytime.
Yes, pretty much. It's pretty fucking well. We can
easily go from masturbating at work and techniques to make you sound quiet to, you know, what that goddamn president has done this time. In a few small sentences, we can stretch the gamut of any kind of topic.
So, Matt, I want to talk about something that's a little bit different, as we usually kind of go with what we've been doing. And me and you have been doing some, I mean, we do like a biannual game.
Yes.
That we'll be doing next month.
Yes.
And that's a custom game that our friend Dave made up from scratch. It's actually extremely well done.
Yes.
Down to our fucking cards and item cards. And we just know some creative people. And beyond that, though, we've been playing a game called Gloomhaven that has been extremely challenging. It's like it's the Dark Souls of board games right now.
Oh my god.
As you cringe.
Dark Souls.
But yeah, so Gloomhaven, Matt, we decided once a month, roughly, we were going to try to do a game night because we're busy adults.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not in college or in school or anything.
Technically, I went back to college.
Oh, okay. Well, you're back in college.
I'm back in college.
So, that being said, though, that means that we have very little extra free time to go out and do things. What is that game?
It's dungeon crawling, deck building, resource management, treasure hunting game. I don't know.
It's kind of like, and you both can correct me if you're wrong, it's kind of like a Pathfinder type game, right? In a way.
In a way, yeah.
It's a preset game, and what you do is you got to manage your cards, and there are rules that make you discard cards. There are rules that let you pick them back up. There are rules that make you discard them forever, but your cards are the way that you move through the board. Your cards are the way that you attack. The cards are the way you do your special abilities, and you have to use them every single turn. So the management side of that is, how do I manage my cards to get through all of the rooms?
Best optimal performance out of my cards.
And since June, we've played June, July, August, and this month.
Yes.
So in 4 months, over about 3 to 4 hour game sessions, we have beat our first map.
First one. The starter scenario.
The starter scenario. Because we didn't know how to manage our cards. And I think now that we finally get it, it's kind of something snapped for me in a good way the last night we were playing, because I realized, oh, well, it was a Reddit thread I was looking at, and I said, you just got to keep moving and keep moving and keep moving. That's the reason we'd turtle up like you would playing it like World of Warcraft, like, okay, so I'm going to play the tank. This guy's going to be my DPS. You're going to be my support class. And that wasn't really the way to play it. The way to play it, well, I mean, I'm sort of a support class. I'm a guy that can block shit. Don't put out a shitload of damage, but I can hold my own with damage taken. And so really I should be just charging the fuck ahead, and you should too, because you also have a melee damage dealer.
Yep.
And Dave, our DM from our other game, who's a ranged damage rogue dude.
Something.
Should be kind of just trailing behind, and then John, which is the magic dealer, John from Carousel Podcast, should be just mopping up behind, because that was kind of the tactic they said. And so if we can always set it up so that initiative for me and you is higher, we can always go ahead, and they can either we can either support each other with heals, or John can do that.
Yeah, but that's always the dangerous thing. That was the dangerous thing about that, because if you start burning your good cards early,
you just burn them on the last board.
On the later, you can get screwed. But sometimes it's better to use your slower cards first.
And until we had success last night, I was really ready to throw in the towel.
Yes, yes.
It wasn't boring. I was just frustrated that I was running out of cards. And in general, I think that now that I have a feel for how the cards are managed better and understand why you would do a short rest versus a long rest and et cetera, I feel like I could do it again and have fun. But now we already decided we're going to play a different game one night. What was the game we're going to play?
Kingdom Death.
Kingdom Death, yeah. Which is a boss killer game where we, I guess...
It's like a weird boss rush mode with town resources.
Everybody has their own village is what I understood, right?
No, we have, as a group, have one village, and that counts as our lives.
And I didn't get much further than that, but I guess do we get random stats with the people we get?
Yes. Rogue Legacy boss rush mode.
That's a really good way of describing it. It's very much a roguelike, but it's a board game.
Yes.
And the game we're playing right now is basically a roguelike because it's set up in a way that we basically have to clear a few maps before we really progress.
Right.
But it's super detail-oriented, and then the other game has, like, the most crazy-looking figurines ever, which is why I think John likes it so much. But I'm kind of dig it, too. What was the phoenix that had the hands coming out of the asshole? That was really weird.
It was everything in there was hands. Hands something coming out of some random cracks.
It reminds me of, like, early renditions, like, what is it, Aronimus Bosch or something like that, the guy that did a lot of, I don't remember if it was him or somebody else that used to do the, like, Dante's Inferno type mm-hmm. style paintings, but it's all those really dark, weird, melted bodies.
Unnatural.
Like, bodies, mismatched and all that kind of stuff.
Cronenberg.
Yeah, it could be Cronenberg, too.
That body dysmorphia.
But, yeah, like, the art style on that. And, like, we don't always usually talk board games, but, like, I feel like it's really appropriate because we just got off that last night.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so weird.
Yeah, it's fun. It was fun once you understand the mechanics of how everything should work.
I don't think it's for everybody, though.
It's not. It really isn't. I mean, you've got to be able to...
This isn't for people that like Monopoly. This is for somebody that likes Dungeons & Dragons and likes video games and likes stuff with crazy rule structures. Because it took a while to really wrap my head around it.
Right, and I right now just thought of it. It definitely reminds me of an RTS. You have a certain strategy you want to when you go into a dungeon. Like, I want to be able to do this, this, and this. But you have to be flexible enough if situations change. If somebody gets in your way, you may not be able to attack.
Right, and I brought this up a few months back, actually back in June when we first started talking about it. And I was saying that with Gloomhaven, the one thing that I really liked when we first started it is we just got a random character. Like, that's one of the things that I like about Dave's game is it's just like, oh, that's an NPC, that turns into you.
Yeah.
You draw a card and then he works it into the game and then now that's your character. Because part of the, stress of role-playing games sometimes is getting that character together, and I think there's a certain level of fun with being given something and see what you do with it.
Yes. Well, and
you just play it however you feel works best, that's most fun to you.
Yeah, and that was the original theory behind us doing it that way with our biennial game, because we don't have a lot of time, and it's easy for us to sit down. You know, most of us know how to play D&D, so it's easy for us to sit down, grab some dice, grab a character sheet, and just go at it. We don't have to spend 18 hours trying to figure out every little min-max.
Well, and before this, we actually used to do that. So we used a weekly game back when we were all in our 20s, and that first session, every time we'd start a new campaign, it was a day, or most of a day,
mm-hmm.
and that was back in the day that we all had, like, Saturday or something off.
Yeah.
And we'd start at, what, like, 10? I don't remember. It was early-ish. like close to lunchtime, and then finished around 11 or midnight.
Yeah.
And so first session was like past dinner time, and then we would start the opening scenario, and then we'd pick it up the next week.
Yeah.
We don't have that luxury because we're gaming twice a year, and now the board game thing, which we can pick up and put down.
Right. I mean, that's what makes it super special. If we're doing it, if we went back to doing it every week again, you know, we would burn out just about as fast as we did last time.
Well, and I think for, like, part of the theme, I think, of Tiltcast is this has kind of grown up with me as well. It's been, what do you do as you get older but still enjoy some of the dorky shit, right?
Right, yeah.
I mean, we all have our different interests, but, like, for me, for sure, I'm probably always going to like video games. I'm probably always going to like RPGs of some sort.
Yeah, and I plan on being an 80-year-old man.
But, you know, you have
playing Mario somewhere, doing
you
something.
You have 75 children, and they require sports and events and dances and all sorts of things.
Well,
and now you're a grandfather, too.
Yeah. And, I mean, that's... I really should stop playing MMOs in general anyway, but that's what's great about them. It's going to log in, do a daily log out, do whatever I need for the kids. So, you can't even... Even certain games like, you know, Spider-Man, there's a little bit of time investment. I can literally just stop where I'm at, log out, and an MMO pick it right back up where I'm at.
So, speaking of games, since nobody really knows you, I won't go into everything you've been doing lately, but in general, we played World of Warcraft, like I said, like a second job for a long time. But after that, I mean, you have an Xbox One, you have a PS4, you have a Switch.
PC, high-end, well...
Mostly
high-end, quote-unquote, PC.
Well, in general, though, what are you playing these days, besides World of Warcraft occasionally?
Well, I finished the Spider-Man, Marvel Spider-Man.
The Spider-Man?
The Spider-Man.
You sound like my dad. I finished the Spider-Man.
I am a grandfather.
I mean, true.
Yeah, I'll finish that. That was just an outstanding, just great, great game. Love the hell out of it. I switch back and forth between WoW and Final Fantasy 14 all the time.
So I'm going to kind of go back to Spider-Man. From what I understand, right, it's Spider-Man themed Batman. Is that an accurate description?
Yes. There's even a spot in there where one of the last tree skills that you get is you hold down your run button and your jump button, and if you hold it down long enough, he'll launch into the air via Spider-Man or Batman Infamous. He'll do a little twirl like the Infamous guy, and then you can immediately start web-slinging. It's basically just...
Like Batman's grappling hook.
Yes, basically.
You
can launch a certain way, and you'll fly almost like a Batman glide through... areas
but I mean, like, the game itself plays, or the type of game it is, it's an action game with RPG elements, much like Batman was, right?
If you played Batman Arkham Knight or Arkham City, you've played Spider-Man.
Fair enough, but it's just
mechanically
Spider-Man.
You've played Spider-Man.
How's Spider-Man's awesome. Jokes?
Good. Yeah. There's bits in there that maybe not hit or miss, but, you know, I'm relatively so focused on the combat. Like, combat's pretty good. It's Batman combat. A little slightly different, but, you know, fighting somebody, there'll be like a spot where a bunch of guys will come in and he'll say something like, you know, if I knew everybody was coming, I would have brought extra Sharpies or something like that, you know.
Very much the juggling button masher, though. I
mean, yeah.
So it still has like a combo system, and like, do you do a thing where if you can go really long without getting hit, that it actually gives you extra XP or something? Or
yeah,
does it have an XP system?
Yes.
Are you doing quests?
Yes, side quests, main quest. Main quest is actually relatively lengthy. And it's really good, and they actually they have a smart way of introducing some of your side quests through your main quest.
About how many villains, like, actual comic villains that aren't complete side villains or one issue villains does it have?
Four. Or no, sorry, six. It is the Sinister Six.
Okay.
Except for like maybe one addition. Instead of being, instead of Doc Ock being a part of the Sinister Six, it's somebody, it's Mr. Negative is part of the six.
Okay. I know the graphics are like off the chain. I mean, that's been something I see the screenshots from all my other friends that have been playing it, right? Does it still play at a really high frame rate looking like that?
Yes. I am horrible with frame rates. Like, I can't, unless I have a meter going, I don't. It never seemed to stutter. I mean, it never seemed to.
Is it so smooth that it makes you sick?
No.
Okay, because I know that's a thing for you.
Yes. Yeah, no.
So it's probably not 60, probably sitting somewhere in the 40 range.
Probably. 30, 40, yeah. It never seemed like it dropped anything. It never seemed to lag or do anything funny, so.
How much gameplay do you think you got out of it?
In the few rare instances where I actually enjoyed an open world game, I got about 80% out of it. I got very many hours of fun, and most of it legitimately was just swinging around.
Yeah, I've heard around 25 to 30. Is that about accurate?
Yeah, roughly, yeah.
And 80% completion, so.
Yeah.
Does it have a lot of the weird fetch quests that Batman did?
Yes. There's you actually come across, it's not a spoiler or anything, it's a side quest, where you come across this one particular man and he's complaining about his landlord evicting him, and he takes care of pigeons, and they, like, 12 of them got loose, and you literally have to chase down 12 pigeons while they fly around the city. And you have to get so close before you can, like, drag them in. And some of them, it felt like it took almost 5 minutes just to get close enough to catch. Some of them, it was almost, you know, a minute or so that got up to it, caught it, and was good. So,
if you had to give it a rating out of 5 stars,
definitely 5.
You think it's one of the best games this year?
Yes.
Do you play God of War?
Yes.
So it's up there with God of War for you right now?
Yes.
In a completely different way?
I think, honestly, I probably had, as fun as God of War was, like, honestly, probably Spider-Man was better. Like, I just think the way that the side quests were set up, the way the story progressed, like, God of War story is really good, but it's a God of War story. He's killing a god. The Spider-Man story is definitely it is almost MCU if you enjoy those quality style of
That was actually another question I had, is like, with everything Marvel actually doing well now, and has Spider-Man finally been purchased by Disney?
No.
It's still Fox, right?
No, it's Sony.
It's still Sony. It's just they have a contract with Sony to use Spider-Man.
Yes.
So did you see the most recent Spider-Man movie?
Homecoming?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Was it good?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, dude.
Is it of the same quality of all the other Marvel movies?
If you haven't watched that yet, it's actually it's in the top half of those movies.
I'm not actually a huge Spider-Man fan, and that's thing is, like, I like Venom, and I'll probably see that.
Well, the best part about Spider-Man Homecoming, you don't see Uncle Ben die for the 900th time.
That's fair.
And especially with the Spider-Man video game. Like, they kind of allude to it like they always do, but the story is there, we know. It's not like another Batman story where we have to tell how
he became Batman. So it's not an origin story. Yeah. He's an established person.
In Homecoming, he's still learning to be Spider-Man. In the Spider-Man video game, even though it's a separate universe, he actually is and has been Spider-Man for a while. Yeah. Like, they talk about a lot of things that have happened in world before you even start playing the game.
Miles Morales is in this, and he was way later on the ultimate side of Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Like, Peter Parker died for Miles Morales to show up in Ultimate. So
who's educate me, because I was never a Spider-Man fan.
Okay, so Marvel had this short-run universe called Ultimates, right?
Right.
All right, so in Ultimates, Peter Parker actually dies.
Mm-hmm.
When he dies, there was apparently this kid, Miles Morales, who also somehow got the same powers as Spider-Man. I forget his exact origin. But he actually takes over the mantle, but his powers are a little bit different. Like, he actually has spikes, shit like that.
This is a Peter Parker Spider-Man, or
yes,
no?
Yes, this is a Peter Parker Spider-Man.
Okay. But Miles Morales shows up in the game.
Interesting.
So, the most important question about, though, being a newer Marvel video game, does Stan Lee make a cameo?
Yes, he does.
Don't tell me how, but it happens.
Yeah. Oh, no, you know it happens. You know exactly when it happens. There is a particular scene you go, oh, that there he is. That's where he was supposed to be. Greg Miller is actually in it from Kind of Funny. I don't know if you ever saw that or you know anything about it.
I'm shaking my head.
Kind of Funny Games. He's another type of podcast. He came from IGN, did all this stuff. Everybody loves him.
Oh, okay. I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I don't follow him too much, but I know of him. And I guess one of the things he likes doing is being a shirtless Spider-Man, to the point that he actually was campaigning to be an alternate cover for Marvel Spider-Man as a shirtless Spider-Man. And there's actually a bit, it happens around October, I guess, I think is when the story is taking place. And there's actually a Halloween party going on. And if you hunt around enough, you'll find him in there. And
there's a shirtless Spider-Man.
There's a shirtless Spider-Man in there.
Okay.
Wow.
Yes.
I've heard about, I'm not shy about who I follow here. I mean, I do follow Giant Bomb. I know that I've heard about him on there, but interesting. Anything else you've been playing that you highly recommend or for this year?
Not really. Final Fantasy 14 is great.
Yeah, I know. Rusty's
RPG.
We gave Rusty hell about it because he was 2 months into that.
I'm giving him hell about it because he quit.
And no, he's playing Warframe now.
Yeah.
I'll roll my eyes.
That's his new addiction. New old addiction.
Yeah, I think he sunk in 130 hours in 2 weeks.
In Warframe?
In Warframe. Jeez.
And like $300.
Jeez.
Woo. So I'm going to round robin a little bit and we'll come back. We've got other things to talk about at the end of the show for sure.
We do.
Jason, what have you...
I haven't played a goddamn thing.
Well, that'll make this easy.
So
what have you been up to? I mean, what the fuck's the deal?
After we last recorded, I actually ended up getting a stomach virus that the kids brought home.
Ooh, nice.
So I actually spent most of last week sick, or last weekend sick, so... Really, I just finished watching Star Trek Voyager for like the fourth or fifth time.
Of course. I know that I've been watching some TV a little bit with a girlfriend, and I've been Netflixing some, and I'm trying to kind of branch out on some
And
other
I finished things. Iron Fist Season 2.
Oh, yeah, I started that. That seems all right.
It's much better than Season 1. I'll give it that.
I stopped watching the Netflix stuff about halfway through Daredevil 2.
Oh, you didn't like
even Jessica Jones. Like, I think I got like 2 episodes in of Jessica Jones and stopped watching. I don't know.
You're a different type of person. That's okay.
You are.
No, I mean, I really, really enjoyed the first Daredevil, and I really, really enjoyed all the Punisher stuff in Daredevil.
And you didn't watch the Punisher standalone?
Not yet. But Punisher standalone. I don't know. There was some came up, and I stopped watching it for some reason, and then just
Daredevil season one back. is probably my personal favorite. It has, and it's not really just story. It just has the best fight scenes I've seen. Like that period, just because he starts to get tired at one point. There's that. I don't know if it's famous or not, but
the hallway fight scene.
Yeah. We've talked about it, where he's like just breathing heavy and just like. Slowly getting through it, slogging through it, but it's such a good scene because it feels so natural.
And it gets more brutal the more tired he gets.
It's that long shot thing like they did in Children of Men where they had the really long shots and they would, but it was really chaotic and it felt natural but not natural. You know what I mean? Like, it just felt like you're more there just because of the way it shot. And they did that in Daredevil. And then they do it again in Punisher. They have a scene, yep, a jail scene. So yep, if you watch Punisher, the standalone, there's a really good fight scene.
In Daredevil.
Was it in Daredevil?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was in Daredevil season 2.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a really fucking good fight scene,
when,
too.
When Elektra, like, fully comes in and starts picking up is when I stopped watching.
In The Punisher, it's in the warehouse where Micro were held up. Like,
that's another really good fight scene. This sounds bad, but, like, I enjoy the story to an extent, but, like, I really just like watching people with powers or high abilities fight. Yeah. And I really enjoy when it looks a little more natural than the hyper stylized stuff, just because
all the MCU stuff.
Well, yeah. I mean, I enjoy watching UFC. I mean, remember we went to difference. That fight?
Yeah.
Or back when I used to do a little bit of fighting before, but like one of the things that I had the most fun with you doing it was me and you that went to the casino that one night and watched that like underdog fight.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like some unknown, but it was a really decent fight.
Yeah.
And I just like watching natural stuff like that.
Yeah.
I'll
tell you this, Matt, when it comes down to it, Daredevil season 1 and 2 are probably the best ones total. Jessica Jones, though, has like the best story progressions. If you can slog through the first 2 episodes, after that, it's like the best progression out of all of them. And then Luke Cage probably has the best total acting out of all of them.
Mm.
Luke Cage also is a badass. I really do like, I like the character. I like the fact that he's trying his best to be a Boy Scout. And then, you know, it's kind of fucking him in the ass a little bit.
Yeah. And then the Punisher you watch just because John Bernthal is the embodiment of the Punisher. And he's just entertaining.
He did a really good job as a Punisher.
I hated him in Walking Dead. Like, outside of, you know, him not being canonically even in the stupid comic books, like him showing up and being the Punisher was just almost perfect.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So
I'll say, switching gears a little bit, I'll say I watched something a little bit different. I watched something called Atypical, which wouldn't be normally up my alley, but it was about a child with autism, and I can relate just based on a lot of personal experience. And that was really endearing for whatever reason. It's really well acted and done. I watched the first episode of Maniac last night, or the night before last.
Oh, Manic?
Or is it Manic?
It's Manic.
I think it's Manic, but I think it's everybody keeps saying Maniac.
Yeah. Okay. Skinny Jonah Hill.
Yeah.
Which is weird. It is weird, but it works somehow, and it has a lot to do with old technology. I don't know if I'm going to like it, but we'll see. And me and the girlfriend are like deep into season 3 of Sherlock, which is where I haven't gotten to in a long time, and I really like Sherlock, so yeah.
My wife just goes to bed to Frasier, so that means I stay up all night watching Frasier.
Ugh.
And then the middle one wanted a show recommendation, and he's been watching Friends. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And Friends is all right.
I've been watching Infinity War over and over and over because Thanos is my hero.
Why?
Because he got it right.
I'll say again.
And he wins. I enjoy a good superhero, but ultimately love when villains actually win. Superheroes can't be perfect all the time, and when villains win, it's really nice. It's just a story in terms of like stories,
yeah,
right, you know? Not in terms of Hitler.
So no, not in terms of
that is one thing words. I did while I was sick. I finally watched Infinity War. Let me tell you, dude, you're missing out.
I gotta get.
Oh, you still haven't seen it?
No,
I mean, I got my phone on me. Let's shut this shit down and watch it now.
Eventually, I'll watch it. Yeah. I'm way behind on stuff. Me and her have been catching up on some of that stuff. Like, I finally watched Doctor Strange a few weeks back. Like, I need to watch that. I
recently bought Ant-Man and the Wasp, and I just recently watched that. And
we've been talking about watching that too.
That's great. You know,
and for me, it's just dating somebody wants to watch all that stuff too, so that's kind of nice. Game wise though, I finally finished Shadow of the Tomb Raider.
It's about time.
I only bought it 2 weeks ago. I bought it right
after
the show.
Right after the show, yeah.
Like the weekend after the show, I was like, I'm going to go get Shadow of the Tomb Raider. So I picked it up and found a Steelbook edition. And I was like, that's cool. It's the same price. It's exactly what I like. I'm burnt out on DLC, and none of the DLC looked like it was something I wanted.
I've come to that spot with DLC. There's
a lot of it's kind of bloated. Like, it has challenge tombs, and I'll explain what the tombs are in a second. And that would be, if it ever goes on sale and I feel like going back to it, maybe I will for the extra stuff. And it's got a new game plus. I could see myself doing that at this point, but I could get rat's ass right now.
I play enough MMOs that if I want a consistent breathing world, I'll stick to those. The Shadow of the Tomb Raider, the Marvel, Spider-Man, anything with DLC video game wise, I'm done with and toss it aside. Like,
I would say
as long as I feel like I got my money out of it.
The one time that I thought DLC seemed really good was, and you probably won't agree at all, but it was Fallout New Vegas. The New Vegas DLC was separate games tagged onto it. So it was a whole nother map, another like 15, 20 hours of content, and they all cost like $10 each. Which will bring me to a news article later, but basically Obsidian made all that shit, and Obsidian knows how to do RPGs. So they made separate stories that were fleshed out that had something to do with the world. You literally pick up no matter what level you're at and play. You could be done with the game, and it wouldn't be overleveled for that area because it would scale things to work with it.
Well, and that's, I think that's one of the reasons that I really don't want them. I think I've picked up a few DLC in the past, and it's always, well, this is just the same stuff. You just, instead of being on this part of the map, I'm on the other part of the map.
I'm fine with that if it feels like an add-on. It's you know what? DLC first came out, it was Brood War for StarCraft. But it wasn't DLC, it was a addition to the game. It was an expansion.
It's the reason why they call them expansions. This is just small bits of content to get like a little bit of extra money. Businesses can be businesses, and they can do that if they want. But like, if you want to give me something to expand it, make a new world, make new story, make new characters.
That brings me to like The Surge has a couple of other DLCs that I've actually thought about getting because I never finished The Surge because it just came at a weird time. And now that it came out like another standalone DLC, I'm kind of thinking about going back to The Surge and finishing it because legitimately underrated game for last year. If you like a weird sci-fi universe paired with some Dark Souls-like combat, then it's cool.
Yeah. Like The Witcher. Yeah, well, quality DLCs.
Yeah, I mean,
for The Witcher 3. I'm serious, dude. Quality.
Hey, I found the one person who disagree with us on like 60% of everything video.
Right.
I will say, so Shadow of the Tomb Raider, though, is an action game. It plays out much like the other ones. Story-wise, is pretty decent. It dives into a lot of Aztec and Inca culture and Maya culture. So it's dealing with a lot of that stuff. So when you played one, I'll just kind of chronologically go through like what I liked and disliked about the first two. First one didn't have enough rating of tombs. It was a room that you had to do some maneuvering around and some platforming to get to an objective, and you're done. Second one had a more depth to it and more reason to do them because there were side quests, but didn't quite do it. First one had really good overall combat, but it wasn't quite mixed quite right. It was still, like, the one thing about Uncharted is the combat always feels a little bit sloppy. And the first Tomb Raider is kind of the same way. Like, they didn't quite get stealth right, but they were close. They had a pretty good idea what they wanted to do. The game had a pretty good length. The second one, combat was much better. The tombs were a little bit longer. Story was a little bit weirder. I didn't care for the story nearly as much. Visuals at the time were super fucking top-notch. And it felt like Lara Croft, the action hero, right? A lot of, like, cliffhanger shit if you ever watched that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Third one is the best one in the series so far by a measurable amount. I like Indiana Jones a lot, a whole lot. And it's like female Indiana Jones. It does a lot of, it's not quite at the humor. So the difference between this and Uncharted, Uncharted has a really good bounce back and forth between Nathan Drake and Sully. And there's a lot of good back and forth there that happens. That's really natural. The storytelling in Uncharted, I think, is better. And it is hokey and campy and fun.
That's more Indiana Jones.
And it does a really good job of that.
Tomb Raider is more Predator.
Well, Tomb Raider, like the first one, they had a moment in the game where you come out of a pool of blood and she's covered in blood, and it's very Rambo. She's still female Rambo. Don't get me wrong. Like, and it's really brutal. which I do like that. Like, they go way over the top with their, basically their fatalities. It's not to a Mortal Kombat level, but just the level of grit that they add to it is cool, and not a campy way or not like an overblown way. But every time she dies, it's still pretty insane. Like, you fall on spikes, and then, like, the spike goes through her neck. Like, it's just, it kind of grosses you out a little bit, but you're like, oh!
Until you keep failing that one part in the damn ocean or the river, and you're just constantly getting jammed in the head, and you're just like, well, this is just lame.
Oh, there was that Conan O'Brien bit with that, wasn't there?
Yes.
Which is pretty hilarious.
That happened to me when I played the first game. Yeah, the first game, when you go down the broken dam or river, it was just constantly, I'd miss a turn or something, and just spikes in the head, and just start over, just spikes in the head.
Well, so it has a lot of natural disaster moments, and I'll say natural disaster is a theme in this game that happens quite often, and it looks hella intense, super intense. So their action scene, much like Uncharted will usually do, is there'll be a interlude in between levels, essentially, right, where you go through a moment in the game where there's an objective of movement and you got to get from point A to point B, but it's a lot of chaos going on. It does that, but it's not usually just somebody chasing you. It's surviving some kind of natural disaster, and it's intense and amazing. I'll just say my favorite scene so far was the mudslide scene. There's a mudslide that happens that you survive, and it's pretty awesome.
Is that like the river or the snow slide that you survive in the other two games?
It's a little different than what you'd expect. But there's a lot of platforming involved and things like that. What it does really well, so the challenge tunes in this game are part of the game, and you kind of discover them on your own. I'm big on just like going through a level and exploring all my options to see what happens, right? And so it'll tell you this area, once you discover the entrance, is a challenge tomb, then you go in it. There's a whole lot of wildlife in this game, and you get attacked quite often by jaguars. They're fucking vicious. Or morails, or piranhas, or whatever. But you go into these challenge tombs, and they are whole separate levels. Sometimes they take me like half an hour. I've been in some of them for up to 2 hours, depending on what it is. There's about 8 of those that are just kind of off to the side, and it's just part of what you're going through. And it makes sense. It's like you go over here and discover some more history, and every one of those rewards you with like a pattern to get yourself a new outfit that gives you extra abilities or gives you extra perks in your skill tree, so that you can do different things. But the levels themselves they're big physics puzzles is essentially what they are, but they feel old and very, what's the machine called? Like, remember the game Mousetrap? Rube Goldberg?
Yes, Rube Goldberg.
Yeah, so a lot of the levels feel like you're setting up a something like that in order to progress. And so there's a whole lot of, like, figuring out, okay, well, these two things are swinging. And when this thing swings over here, I can attach a rope to this thing, and it'll turn this thing off. And then, okay, then I did that. Now I got to get rid of this fire, and then I got to get rid of this fire. I got to do this. And then, oh, shit, there's actually things attacking me on top of this. Fuck. And so, like, there's a lot of... The challenge tombs are huge, like way bigger than what I would expect, and they're really cool. Visually, I'm playing it on Xbox Pro, and it's in 4K HDR. I will say, if you have a bright HDR setting on your TV, there are times you're going to have to put it on the brighter HDR. It does the 1:1 black so well that it looks like my TV's turned off in spots. Sometimes that's a little hard in a tomb that's super dark and your flashlight isn't turning on. Like, my major gripe right now is, with all the games, is you never get to choose when you can turn on your light, and they do it for dramatic effect. But like, when I'm on the side of a wall with my climbing axe and I'm trying to jump, but I can't really see where I'm jumping except for like the gleam of something, or I think maybe I need to drop down, but I can't see anything on the bottom because it is pitch black. That's a little distracting, but it does add a layer of realism. It bridges almost to an Uncanny Valley territory with the graphics, just because of how fucking sharp it is. It is a really good looking game, and it runs smoother than God of War. It sits at the same level of God of War does with fidelity, but it runs at a higher frame rate, and it's probably because there's more dark spots. I don't know. But it barely ever loads. There's occasionally it'll say, wait for streaming, which is a weird thing, and it, like, when I'm backtracking through a bunch of stuff, it's happened to me probably about 4 times in about the 30 hours I put into it. but I tend to go back because you can fast travel between campfires once you've unlocked it. And that'll let you go back to an area to kind of go, well, oh, I forgot about this challenge tomb or whatever. Or I discovered it late through clues that I was picking up. And it's like, oh, it was back in that level. I'm going to go back. And so there's a load time between fast travel. And then occasionally in those really big areas, it'll say wait loading or whatever, which is a little bit weird. But the like overall story, I wouldn't say is quite as good as the Uncharted. I just think they do such a good job of that. It's really hard to beat. But I think it scratches that same itch enough, especially for people that are on Xbox that don't have a PS4. I know it's on both, but if you're on Xbox and you've never had the opportunity to play an Uncharted game, this is about as close as you're going to get, and it's a quality experience. We talk about games at the end of the year, like, I like this well enough that it's going to sit somewhere up there. I don't know of very much else that's going to beat it except for RimWorld that comes out in a few days. Speaking of that, RimWorld comes out in a few days.
So they did actually improve on 1 and 2.
Absolutely.
They needed to. I mean,
absolutely. Like, it's solidly for our scoring system sits at 4.5, I think. Just very minor issues with certain things with pacing. Reason I say pacing is I was backtracking for things and I didn't feel like I really needed to. Like, I felt like, I think Skyrim is the first game that does this where you'd go through a dungeon and there'd basically be a back door that you would get out. Like, they have some of that, but it doesn't immediately drop you out. Like, it seemed unnatural in Skyrim, but it would be like, all right, you get to the end and then it loops you right out, so you don't have to worry about backtracking. This will get you to a faster option, but you still have to backtrack to get out of things. And that
sucks.
So you still spend about 3 or 4 minutes getting back out of what you're in, even though it's a much faster progression. You still got to backtrack, and that's a little bit weird. But I mean, that's a fairly minor gripe in the grand scheme of it. Like, the combat, like I said, it's pretty fucking savage. Not everything can be killed with your bow. There is a really cool, like, arrow that turns people on each other. It makes them freak out and they start shooting each other. There's a really cool, like, very predator mode thing where you're in a tree and you get somebody underneath you, you hit X, and then you throw down your axe with a piece of rope on it and pull them up and kill them. And then drop them down very predator style off the limb. That's pretty savage. Batman. Or, you know, Batman.
Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Predator. Infamous. Predator.
Yeah, but it relies really heavily on stealth. You can definitely go guns blazing a lot of areas. And as far as the combat's concerned, I would say this is tuned for everyman gamer. I very much feel like I could have put it on hard and I would have been pretty okay. I was just playing it on normal. I was just like, I'll just play it on whatever the normal setting is and get through it. And it wasn't quite as challenging as I would like it. But that's, I think they did it in a way that they wanted to get the most sales. And it does have a harder setting, so.
I've gotten to the point with video games where I just want to play them and have fun. Like, I don't care anymore about, I just want to get my money out of it. If I felt like Spider-Man, paid the $60. I'm not a huge person of, I really don't like open world games. I like sandbox games more. And Spider-Man, I got my money's out of it. I'm done. I'm going to throw it away. Like, no more. Like, the idea that there's some sort of separation between players over, well, I played it on hard, so that makes me... No, it doesn't. It makes you a jerk. Like, just that's play the game. I mean, if you want it to be harder, that's fine, but don't think you're a better gamer than I am.
Well, I'm not trying to...
I'm not saying you are. I'm just saying that that's this sentiment that I keep seeing float around every now and then.
Well, and there are games that I specifically get frustrated with. So a game I want to like that I haven't been able to get into, and it is actually Bloodborne. Like, I've beat the Soul series multiple times. I think I have, like, on New Game Plus on Dark Souls the original. So I feel like I'm a fairly competent action RPG gamer. I play Bloodborne and I can get through like 4 bosses, and then I just start beating my head against the wall for like 3 hours, and there is no difficult setting. The way you get, you just have to get good, so to speak, right, with that game. And because the way that's paced out, it was a little bit tuned a little too hard for me, and that's ruins my enjoyment of the game. I really want to like it because I really love the art design world.
And I really want to love those games, but I don't want to spend 12 hours trying to beat the first boss because I don't roll the right way, or right. I'm not hitting an invincibility frame 2 seconds before he hits me. Like, that just seems hard for hard's sake. Like, I want a good story, I want good controls, I want to play a video game and move on.
Yeah, Dark Souls is kind of its own animal. I feel like Dark Souls, the setting, the difficulty setting's in a perfect place for me. But yeah, Bloodborne is definitely on the other
end of the scale. I've watched you beat your head against the table on Bloodborne.
Right.
I know what that looks like.
I don't even
like.
Remember what game we were talking about last week, and I was having difficulty, and then I jumped in and beat whatever it was. I think it was, I was talking about Bard's Tale 4.
Yeah.
And I'd gotten stuck on something, I finally figured it out. I've actually beat my head against the wall right now in that game. To follow up on that, so I haven't played it a lot in the last couple weeks, there is a certain spot I was stuck on, right? And it's sitting on a mixed Steam rating, and I think that's appropriate right now. I'm as much of a Brian Fargo fanboy I am, I'm trying to be as appropriate in my rating as possible. I feel like the game is genuinely good. I think what it was held back with is they were trying to beat Pathfinder for RPGs, and I don't know why, because Pathfinder's not doing any better right now. And they got it out a little bit ahead of where the game needed to be released. I'm in a particular dungeon that I've got something stuck, and it's way early in the game. And it's not progression breaking, but it bothered me enough that I emailed the support, and they were kind enough to get back with me within hours and tell me what it was. And then I said, okay, so the spot you're on, we've duplicated the error. It's going to be in a future patch. Well, the future patch dropped last night. And it specifically mentions the error that I was mentioning. It says insert in this particular dungeon, there's a button that doesn't unstick. Well, we fixed that. The particular error was, it's the game has save points that you click on. So like little totems that you'll click on, and that saves your game. Or if you exit the game, it basically freezes the game on a save state, and then you pick it back up wherever you're at. So you can pick it up, put it down anytime you want. But I did that on that dungeon with one of the buttons already pushed depressed, and it stayed depressed no matter what I did with it. So now I could never unstick the button to solve the rest of the puzzle.
Mm.
The puzzles are reasonably hard. I was just stuck on that, and I'm stuck on this weird one where there's a block puzzle where there are two blocks on one side and two blocks on the other side, and you have to push them over a pressure plate. And at certain points while you're traveling, at certain points in the room, they also affect the block on the other side of the room. So once they get past a certain point, they also move both blocks. So you have to – they've got certain things lined up, so you have to push it to where one doesn't move and the other one does. And it's a fairly difficult puzzle. Like there's not a lot of guides out for it right now because it's an independent game. And I've beat most of the challenges on my own because it's a really big puzzle game. It's an RPG. It's a puzzle game with RPG elements. That's really what it is. And really, really fucking good music. But what's held it back has been some of those technical errors, and most of the people reviewing it have been talking about that. The bitching and moaning about how the skill system works, I think, is really juvenile, because it forces you into picking something. It forces you into picking four skills. And the thing is they're not permanent. You could just reassign them out of combat. But those are the four skills you have for combat every single time. Until you're out of combat, then you pick different ones that you've pumped points into to get different sets of skills. And you really can pick different skills based on like the type of weapons you have and things like that. And then the graphics, being on Unreal 4, don't look up to par to where things are right now, but the budget is considerably less. So I kind of give it a pass on that. And on 4K settings, it looks beautiful. So I'm pretty okay with all of that. My problem was with the technical stuff that they addressed, and then 2 weeks later, we have an actual patch that fixes it. So the state with most games in general, that this happens quite often nowadays, I mean, I can give it as much of a pass as I can literally give anything else. But it was not in as polished a state as it probably should have been based on being A, Kickstarter, B, having 60-year-old fanboys of the original Bard's Tale series that are going to beat it the fuck up. And then maybe Brian Fargo could have measured expectations a little bit better as he was going into it. Because the trailer for the game looks really good. And then I realized when you play the game, it looks just like the game on ultra settings. It does not look like the game at 1080p on high settings.
Right.
There is a difference there. And it didn't show any character models. So it is what it is. It'll probably be, I'm going to finish it. And then I've had a high level of enjoyment with it. I've pumped over 40 hours into it. It's just the technical stuff that was holding me back. Like, I don't think it's a 5. I said if it didn't get fixed, I was going to put it at like a 3.5. Where it's at right now, I'd probably give it a solid 4 out of 5, I think. It's a decent game, I mean, but it's not a game for everybody. And it is not exactly old Bard's Tale. I mean, if you guys go back and play old Bard's Tale, you're literally got a picture of what happens and a whole bunch of stats and a whole bunch of text, and you move on a grid very much like Legend of Grimrock, except it's in a little bitty grid on the top left, little picture on the top left-hand side.
Yep.
And it is seriously just like pre-made D&D. That's basically what Bard's Tale is, with a little bit of animation. This just takes that up to much higher-end graphics and does a lot of the same things, but it's a little flashier, and there's a lot more puzzles that you're not solving in text. You're solving them physically. So I don't know where the expectation is as to what it needs to be.
Nostalgia expectations.
Yeah, and they've got the old game. You can get all three of the old games now that they had. I think it might have been Beamdog or somebody like that that made them. All three of them for $14.99, and they're finishing up the third one right now. Like, that's a really fucking good deal. And now they also got the modern game on top of that. And I really liked Wasteland 2, and they're coming out with Wasteland 3. Like, you know, they're Godfather RPG stuff. And the RPG stuff in that game is really fucking clever, and the writing is really fucking clever. And I think that's what In Exile's been really good at that a lot of these major companies aren't. And it's really fucking vulgar. I like that a lot. It's very not PC in all the right ways. It's not PC, and it doesn't shy away from anything aside from modern politics or, you know, and it's not trying to go overboard with like a story about something sort of relevant to now. It's just, it's unabashedly an RPG, like you would play with your buddy, and you go off on random tangents. That game goes those kinds of places. So, last but not least, cause I haven't had any time to play anything else. I've sunk an ungodly amount of time into a game called Shortest Trip to Earth. Has anybody here played Faster Than Light or FTL?
Yep. I love FTL.
Okay, well, Fastest Trip to Earth is an early access version of a game that's very much FTL 2. Extremely FTL 2. It's got brighter graphics. It's made in Unity. It's not pixel graphics. It's like kind of hand-drawn. But essentially what it is you get a starter ship, and the starter ship has modules that are starter modules. And you warp between stars, just like you do in FTL, and on every star there's several planets, which is different than FTL. Several planets on every star, and then there are random events that happen on each of those planets. Some of them have zero events, some of them have mother events. But the event could be anything with a series of, like, text adventure stuff of, like, hey, this... I'll give you an example. So I hit this planet, and the planet says, hey, it appears to be that there's civil unrest on this planet, and there are... Stage 2 civilization with nuclear weapons. One faction would like to sell you more fuel, but they're at war with the other faction and they're losing. Would you like to interfere? Would you like to back away? Would you like to see if they'll meet you in space? And I'm making up some of this as I go. And so you make that choice, right? And then it escalates from there. It does another roll and escalates. All right, so now that I'm involved, would you like to shoot down the nukes? Would you like to take out the powers that be? Do you need to send your crew down for diplomacy? So usually I choose, like, obliterate the enemy. So that's how I choose that, right? And then it says, well, both sides are now obliterated. There's nothing left on the planet. Would you like to harvest the planet? And then so at that point I say yes. Well, then I get one last fate point, which is part of the roguelite part of it. But I get more resources. So now I've got more food, I've got more fuel, I've got more metal, and I've taken as much as my stores can possibly carry. So now there's a picture of a raised planet. It says, you've destroyed a lot of the ecology. There are many races that will never come back for this. You've also...
How do you feel, Ender?
Yeah, and so it does things like that, and each of these random events happen, but then you also get into combat, and the combat's fun. So it's actually a major point of this game is the combat. And the way that it does it is FTL would have a pause menu, and you'd delegate, call it like a space disaster sim, right? Like, Scotty needs to move from the teleporter room over, or from the engine room over to the teleporter room to fix the teleporter, right? The transporter, right? And so it does stuff like that where, all right, well, I've got all these people assigned to stations. They're providing bonuses to the stations. I need to reassign them to different places because I've got a fire that broke out, or now I've got intruders or whatever. On top of that, you manually aim your weapons. So every weapon has a firing arc and then a spread arc based on the accuracy of the weapon and the accuracy of the crew member using it. All the crew members are randomized, have their own weapons, have their own traits, have their own abilities. I shouldn't say abilities. The abilities are like, I have a 5 in turrets or a 2 in operating or a 3 in security or a 4 in repair or whatever, right? And those all level up as you go through the maps. But you set the manual firing arc. You just take your mouse and you right-click on places you want to fire, and the middle of that is a crosshair, and then that says, okay, well, the next time this shoots, that's where it's going to hit-ish, in like a 40 degree spread somewhere in there. And then based on your accuracy of your crew member, then that also helps that out a little bit. So you set the firing arcs for all these guns that you have on your ship that are all modules that you've gotten through all these adventures that you've done. And then that determines where it hits. And then you can knock out specific modules on the ships. So I can say this one ship penetrates shields on this weapon, so I'm going to shoot that weapon. Then I'm going to shoot the power generator on the other one because it's mostly laser weapons. And then I'm going to shoot the warp drive on this other one because I know it's going to try to warp away too fast and bring its buddies. So you're managing that, and it does it in like ultra slow time, and then you hit space again and it puts it at real time. But you can totally pause it, but it doesn't have a pause hotkey, which is kind of weird. It's just super slow time. It's like eighth speed. It's so slow, like it would take your gun a minute to shoot. So you can kind of see what's charging up on the other station to shoot, or what, where they're routing power or whatever. But you line up all your shots, and then you just kind of fumble around what you're shooting, who's repairing what, who you're shooting that just boarded your ship, like how much power I'm going to give to my engines. It doesn't do the FTL thing where you actually assign power. It's just whatever the skill is of the crew member that you assign to it, so how fast that thing's going to come back online or be repaired or whatever. The whole bunch of resources to manage, which I know that sounds ultra boring, but I think it's good because it's your metals, what you repair with or what you trade with. Your fuel is what takes you between stars. Your food is what heals your guys or how much they eat. You have your currency, and you have your exotics and the exotic and synthetics. And synthetics you use for certain repairs or synthesizing to other things. You use the exotics as trade items or part of story events. And all of those things are managed independently of each other. And the cool thing, I love like the be able to like rearrange my ship. And so, because you pick up modules that you put on your ship. So this is a bigger cargo bay, or this is a better gun. And they all have their own random roles on the guns and things like that. So I've got one that was like a 4-barreled laser, but the fourth barrel took extra power and didn't shoot anything, but it had a fast recharge speed. So the negative was, is this thing took like double the power, but it had a fast fire speed. And so I was like, fuck it, I'll just put that on there. Or I went into spots where, like, to save food, you can put people in hypersleep. So I've got a hypersleep module most of the time on a ship. And if I've got too many guys, I'll throw them in there, and they're basically the backups to everybody. Or I send them all repair and security. So when I have major damage, I wake them all up. Or if I have intruders, then I have all these guys for security, and they handle that where everybody else handles stations. But and it just randomly generates each level as you go, and it's pretty cool. Like, it's super under... It's one of those things where, like, you just look at what's trending, and then I was looking through, like, games that won, like, the 8 best of Gamecom, and I was like, wait, it's like FTL? I'll check this out. It's, like, $16. That's not bad. So I checked it out, you know, and then I've been staying up way too late after work playing that stupid game the last few nights. I mean, I've already sunk 12 hours into it in 3 nights.
That's good.
Yeah, especially, you know, not being available till later in the evening. So
it is very much, I'm looking at video of it right now, and it is very much FTL, just like you said, with rendered hand-drawn artwork instead of pixel sprites.
Yeah, very similar in the way the game plays, too. So, I mean, I think somebody should talk about it because basically nobody knows about it. And it's been in development hell for like 4 years, and they got a publisher this year. I think they were funding it on Indiegogo. And then just didn't have the money to finish it. And then I guess Iceberg Games, I think, is the one that picked it up. And then they got it into an early access place. And basically 5 of the 10 levels are complete. And not all the ships are in the game, but the basic gameplay concepts are there. And they've just said, well, yeah, it's not balanced, but it's a roguelike. The last thing I'll say about it, what makes it a roguelike is, all right, so I get through the game, I get to a certain point, I get blowed up. Well, I get these fate points based on different actions I did, and I'll know how many fate points I have as I go through the game. Those carry over to the next game I have, which gives me extra money, so to speak, or currency to buy either permanent upgrades that last through all the games after that, or minor upgrades to ships. So I might say, oh, I want the second level of lasers on this ship. I want a better sensor module. I want a better engine. I want a pet that draws fire. There's always a pet on the ship. There's always either a cat or a weird alien or a robot or whatever. Or I'll say I want a crew member that's already trained, or I want more shields or more armor or whatever. And every ship that they have has different specific modules, and then all of the same. And then I've been unlocking additional modules as I go through every playthrough. Playthrough typically takes, the first playthrough took me 30 minutes. I died pretty quick. Longest playthrough was 2 hours. Had fun with it every fucking time. So super big on that, but it doesn't release till next year, so I can't really say, give my official response on it till next year. Especially because RimWorld's coming out this year anyway. Probably be my game of the century. It's just so fucking good.
Right now it's on sale for $17. By the time this episode is posted, it'll be back to its original price of $20.
All those 20 bones. But yeah, that's what I've been playing. I talked at length about those stuff because I felt like, especially with Shortest Trip to Earth, nobody knows what the fuck that is.
Yeah, I never never heard of it.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I don't know. Does anybody have anything else game-wise to talk about they've been playing? We've got plenty to talk about in the second half.
We do.
I think we'll take a quick break and we'll be back.
And we're back.
Oh, we are back, aren't we?
We are.
So, I'll just update you guys. I'll be playing more things. I mean, Matt just loaned me Spider-Man, so I'm going to try to get through some of that. But with RimWorld releasing on the 17th, I'm going to be going to play more of that. Now I have a real excuse. It's part of one of this year's releases.
Play Cannot Spider-Man help myself. While you have it. You will, play Spider-Man. You will own RimWorld. You can get to it after you finish Spider-Man.
Dude, and just there's, saying. There's I have this something special about... I know you said you weren't a Spider-Man fan, but there is just something just... I kid you not, just 30 minutes swinging around town, not doing anything. Just the movement feels great.
Well, I'll tell you, it's on my list, and I use this generator, right? It's nothing special. If you take...
It's his ADD spreadsheet.
I do have an ADD spreadsheet. So what I do is I take a list of games that I want to play. When I can't decide, I add the RAN function to the column to the right of the game, which assigns a random number, so in Excel. And then I just copy that down, and then I just sort smallest to largest, and then, of course, it sorts the other column, and it's a random game generator, is what or random list generator or order. And I posted it in our group, so like the games that I had on my list, because I didn't know I was going to be able to get Spider-Man today, was Frostpunk, Tomb Raider, Dead Cells, Bard's Tale 4, RimWorld, Vampire, Death's Gambit, God of War, and Pillar of Eternity. Problems of Eternity 2. And those are what I'm committing to beat in the next 2.5 months.
Good luck with that.
I think I can do it. And then we got Fallout
Dead
coming out.
Dead Cells is...
I've got a good feel for Dead Cells. I haven't beat it, but I've gotten pretty far.
I want to get it. I still want to get it. It still looks really fun.
And Frostpunk, for all intents and purposes, I've actually beat most of that. I've beat the main scenario. I just beat one of the other scenarios the other day. I just beat another scenario the other day. That game's still really fun, and I recommend if you like strategy games and city-building games that you get it. It's a mix of survival, decision-making, and RPG along with city builders, and that you can beat the scenarios in an evening. So it's one of those games, well, I say a long evening, like 5-6 hours. Some of the other ones, depending on how you do it, the one for, it's called The Refugees, I beat that the other night. It's just you got to find a way to rescue most of the refugees that are coming to your town, and you have to make your town survive through all the cold while you're doing it. And there's a lot of micro to make it work, and I failed at it about 7 times, and I was failing quick enough that I was able to
starting over wasn't an issue.
Yeah, I was failing within the first 30 minutes. I was like, what was my mistake? Oh, it was this. This was the wrong order for this. So there's like a build order for that to make it work, at least for me, based on the decisions I was making. I was going to stick with the same decisions every time so that I knew how to work it. And that was my strategy for that. And I feel like if you play Frostpunk and you lose, stick to the same decisions. That way you can kind of figure out, because there's just story event decisions you got to make. So if you stick to that, then it gives you a good idea of how to beat that map that you just placed, so that you can kind of figure out what you're making mistakes on. Highly recommended. It's going to be somewhere on my list this year. It's super fun. But moving along, we've got other things to talk about. And one of the things that was really big is the whole Walking Dead series thing, right? We know that the company died. Telltale Games is no longer messing around with that at all. Skybound Games actually sent out a tweet very recently saying, hey, they're picking up the final season of it. I can't remember specifically what Skybound Games has done off the top of my head.
I've seen the logo around.
I have, too. So that's why I can't figure out what it is.
Ironically enough, that's the studio Robert Kirkman started.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
So this
kind of come full circle in a weird way.
Right. They're doing the final season of the actual show now. So that's pretty interesting. I didn't realize that. Yeah, Skybound Entertainment is Robert Kirkman's studio. Mm-hmm. So anyways, that's an interesting twist, and I think we'll see how it plays out, literally. But I am going to wait till the final chapter is ready before I even touch that.
So, big one, you'll recognize Skybound did The Long Dark.
I love The Long Dark. And it's out, but not quite out. They're doing the episodic release of it. Which is why I've been kind of waiting to talk about it on the show. The basic survival mode was kind of the sandbox they gave to test the mechanics out, which was fun. But they have an episodic release where you're playing through certain scenarios. There's a story. It's voice acted. There's a bunch of things that are going on. You're a guy that crash lands in the Canadian wilderness. And there's a whole linear story with branching paths that you do to survive. And it just kind of goes in chapters, basically. Super interesting. I think it's pretty good. But there was only two chapters released, and I originally played it and didn't realize they'd be finished. Like, they might be finished this year with all of them. So if they are, I'll try to beat that by the end of the year. But I think it'll be one of those things like cool games I played last year, this year kind of thing. Kind of like Road to Redemption that I'm playing right now, too. What were some of the other things that we had on there? I thought both of those things were pretty good. I know that we were... Rimworld, right, that comes out on the 17th, that's actually finally out, and I'll say some things about what it was before and what it is today. When it released and over the last 5 years, basically it's just been a colony management sim with kind of choose your own objective, so to speak, and it still is that, but there's a real point to Rimworld now. So what Rimworld is now is your adventure to get off the planet you crash landed on, and at the end there's an event that's kind of tower defense-like, that you have to do in order to build your spaceship and get off. So you're trying to get through the technology tree to get off the planet. That game is not for everybody. I like it a hell of a lot. It's a weird... adventure sim is not the right way to say it, but you pick imperfect people that are randomly chosen for you to make a colony work with these imperfect people, and sometimes they go crazy and kill and eat everybody or light everything on fire or... you know, who knows? But, like, there's a whole part of the sim that lets you, like, create caravans now and go to other settlements and raid them or trade with them. You've got these, like, cryopods that you can launch across the globe to go do something, and then you've got to have, like, enough food to get them back. Or you could just launch people off and be disposable with them and just be like, all right, that's my raiding crew, but they're never coming back, but I'm going to destroy the other establishment, whatever. But essentially, that comes out on the 17th, which will be after this episode's release. By that time, I'll probably have played some of it to kind of let you know what I think. But that's really high on my radar. I know there was a case that Nintendo's developing right now that turns your cell phone into a Game Boy, which I think is actually pretty fucking cool.
That is basically what it is it's a folio cover for smartphones?
Basically.
So
the patent, I actually watched something recently where they were talking about it. And I think the assumption is that with the patent and the cover for the phone, it basically turns your phone into a Game Boy.
Yeah. What it's supposed to do is it's actually supposed to give you tactile buttons that will actually still touch down on screen, theoretically in the same place as the on-screen buttons would be. Right.
So. Yeah, but I think one of the things that they talked about was the fact that it actually probably is... they're patenting it to keep people from developing it and against emulation, whatnot. But it would be increasingly awesome if they literally did something like that. I'm looking to buy a new phone within the next year, and I hope if they come out with that they have a...
oh, yeah.
It fits my phone, because I will specifically buy that phone if I can play a Game Boy, an emulated Game Boy at work.
Well, and the thing about emulators being increasingly more illegal nowadays than they used to be. I think they always were, but now they're actually cracking down on that shit.
Well, yeah. And only because of their... A, they're the... online thing with the Nintendo, and they're, you notice they don't care, they didn't care before. It's only when they started to resell them that it mattered. So with the,
but they don't even resell them now. I mean, the eShop,
the Nintendo Mini, the NES Mini, and then now the games they're giving to you for free for their,
yeah, but do you keep them forever or do they cycle out?
They're supposed to cycle out, I think.
And that's the thing. Like, it turns into a games as a service kind of weird thing with that, where, like, on Wii U had Wii Store, right? And I've got Mario 3, Legend of Zelda. I've got some of those classic games, and I own them, or I at least own the software license, right? And I can still go back and play them because it's downloaded to the Wii. So I was trying to do my part and not just buy, or buy, like, just play emulated games. Like, I was like, okay, I can support this for $4.99. Good price point for an old NES game, right?
Right, but how do you actually have your Wii hooked up?
What do you mean?
Like, do you have, I mean, are the servers for the Wii still up? I mean,
I haven't messed with it in a while.
Right. So why mess with it, you know? They're going to rotate. It's rotated out already.
When I finally get a Switch, I will try that out. But
yeah, $20 a year for a few games to get rotated in and out, that's fine.
I mean, if we go to that, like, the Xbox feature for Game Pass has been pretty rewarding so far.
Yeah, it really has.
I mean, the Hitman series is on it right now. Doom's on it. The Wolfenstein games are on it right now.
So you're doing it now anyway.
Well, I'm doing it now. I was doing it. I started doing it for Vermintide.
Just because Nintendo is doing it doesn't make it any different than what everybody else is doing.
But they're just
doing
old games. And the nice thing about...
Oh, trust me. I'd rather much be Xbox have One emulated games on my computer.
But Xbox One, I mean, I got it basically for Vermintide. I was like, so if I have this for 4 months, I've still paid less than I'd have bought for a new copy of Vermintide, and I don't know that I'm going to be playing it 8 months from now. So I've been playing it with my old boss, JD, and we've been messing around with that occasionally, and it's fun. So, and that's the perfect price point for me was $10 a month to jack around with that, and also to, like, try out Graveyard Keeper. I played a shitload of that a few months ago, and I'm still, like, I'd go back to that if I didn't have a list that was, like, as long as my arm right now to play. So.
Right, and it's just what Nintendo is doing. It's just everybody's, for some reason, shocked about it.
I just wish...
I mean, you know, you play Mario 3 until you're done playing Mario 3, and then they rotate it out. You play game until...
We have that retro shop here in town that sells retro games. I can't remember what it's called. It's over there behind where Toys R Us used to be. And I've thought about going in there, like, after...
It's nice. They got a few free little... And at this point, emulated arcade games.
I'd probably get a Retron and play old carts on it. Like, I like the idea of something with modern hardware playing some of these older games.
If you're going to go that way, I can definitely tell you, just spend the money and get the Super NT Mini. I'm trying to remember who it's by. I might have to look it up here in a second. But I ended up picking up one of those Retrons.
Yeah.
And the bad part about it is the way that the emulation works, it doesn't always... It isn't always able to play the game that you want to play. I think I've got about, out of all the old carts that I had, about 30% of them actually played.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, and then some of them I could get to play, and then they wouldn't play again.
The, like, Super NT was the one that literally plays everything.
That's like one-to-one emulation. It's like $150 bucks, but it's...
See,
it works.
The Super NT, I know, is actually programmed with all the different... regions and stuff. If I remember right, the Retron is not. It's an open-ended one.
Yeah.
Which means not all the games will play on it.
Interesting. Now, Jason, you'd posted something about Assassin's Creed 3, which was a weird one to begin with. So it dealt with the Revolutionary War, but it's getting a HDR 4K remaster with new lighting and visuals and crowd effects and all sorts of shit, right?
Yeah, basically, instead of them just doing a 4K resolution update to it, they're actually going back in, redoing all the lighting, redoing some of the sprites, redoing some of the textures, etc. So
why
it's
three?
Not
that's a really weird one to pick. Like, it to me, did they redo Brotherhood and redo 2?
No.
Because I still feel like
those are the good ones. People still talk about those two.
Those are the two that got me into Assassin's Creed, and then I was let down by 3 and then let down by...
To be honest, I think with 3 is close to the end of life on the previous generation that it was.
So it's probably easier
to upscale.
Yeah, and for me, like right now, I need to get through some of the... Like, I still haven't finished the last Assassin's Creed, even though I liked it, just because there was so much of it. And that's weird for me, but right now I'm at a place where I want to pause and do something else for a second, and I've been so busy at work. Like, literally, I was so busy I couldn't do game night the last month. Because I was working 10, 12, 13 hours a day. There's just no way around it. There was only so many support staff and only so many people doing an extra person's worth of work. So, like, just, I had to. And I'm going to run into that with what I do right now sometimes, and I need something that works with my schedule. One other reason why I don't do MMOs or competitive games, because I drop off the face of the earth for a few days while I get shit done. And
but they're always there. You can always just pick them right back up.
Yeah, but I can't commit to raid schedules and all that shit anymore. I don't. And you know LFRs me.
LFRs
like,
knocked all that out.
I want to be main tank. I want to have a structure to it. I want to watch videos. I want to have people that are so tight that I can count on them to do things at the exact minute that I want to do.
There's your hitch.
Yeah, my hitch is playing that competitively again.
Yep.
But moving along.
But the other main changes that they're making is denser environments and denser crowds, which was a failure on that game. There wasn't enough in the environment, I don't think.
I know. Speaking of Assassin's Creed, that's going to be something I'm going to try to play this year. Really, the only big things that I want to play left is Assassin's Creed, Red Dead Redemption, and Fallout.
Yes. And I hate open world games, but I'm really, really excited. I honestly want to play Red Dead Redemption. And I come back from vacation.
Are you working overnight?
To get Red Dead Redemption. No, I'm on mornings.
Well, okay, so maybe you're probably getting on PS4, aren't you?
I don't know, maybe. I mean, I own a PS, you know.
Xbox and a PS4.
Yeah. My son's using the Xbox now.
So I mean, I can't guarantee that it'll be always on at the same time, but I mean, I'll get it on a system you're getting on just so I can have somebody to occasionally play multiplayer with.
Oh, we don't even know. That's not on PC at all, is it?
No.
Because the original was never on PC.
No, and I'm on a borrowed card, so I'm not going to get it on PC right now.
Dang. Because I know a lot of coworkers at work started actually utilizing those games that cross play between PC and Xbox, like
the Play Anywhere.
Yeah, that Play Anywhere stuff, and
that's nice too.
I think State of Decay does that, and does Vermintide do that as well? I think.
I don't know. I never.
There's a few games that are doing it. I think it's pretty cool.
I think so. Ruiners does it too, which is awesome because I can play it on my Xbox and then play it on my Surface.
Oh, the game Ruiner. Yeah. Oh, have you been playing that?
Yeah,
that game's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
That's a hard game.
I'm going to get Pokemon Let's Go.
Okay. Good job.
Let's Go Eevee. I'm getting the Let's Go Eevee version.
All right.
And I also pre-ordered that PlayStation Mini. I'm getting that. I'm stupid. I don't care.
What's good on PlayStation?
Everything. Final Fantasy VII, Ridge Racer 4, Flash.
Is Final Fantasy VII on that?
Yes.
Yes.
So you've done your research. What else is good on there?
I'm trying to remember. It's harder. They only announced like 6 or 7 games.
I mean, the only thing I ever played on PlayStation was March of the Black Queen Ogre Battle.
Well, see, that's...
And that's not going to be on there.
The NES, Super Nintendo, and I think PlayStation. And I've basically been PlayStation all the way ever since then.
I mean, when you first met me, I had a PS2.
Yeah.
And a game.
I had PS2 and a
Dreamcast.
I've owned them all, I think. I
had a Sega Saturn at one point.
I didn't have a Saturn.
And I had Afterburner. I think it was Afterburner that I played a lot on that. Was it Super Shark, I think, was the other game I played on that.
So far, right now, the confirmed titles for it are Final Fantasy VII, Jumping Flash, Ridge Racer Type 4, Tekken 3, and Wild Arms.
Hey, yeah, I forgot about Tekken 3. Oh, man, Tekken 3 was really good.
It was probably the last really good Tekken. Really.
What else you got, Jason?
Not much on the news realm. There was a little bit of a rumor that Microsoft is currently trying to obtain Obsidian.
That is a pretty big deal.
I
mentioned it earlier tonight. Thanks for reminding me, because that was something I wanted to lead into. Obsidian being the people most famous for, I think, Fallout New Vegas, which is kind of, but I mean, they've had other games. They had Alpha Protocol. They had Knights of the Old Republic 2. They did Baldur's Gate originally, right? I'm trying to think.
Maybe. No, Obsidian did the remasters.
Did they? I don't know,
I'm pretty sure.
I'd have to really think. I always get Obsidian and In Exile mixed up because they're very similar in what they do and have a lot of people that kind of cross over. If you're familiar with Josh Sawyer, he's worked for Obsidian quite a bit. So Josh Sawyer being the guy that wrote a lot of stuff for Baldur's Gate, Knights of the Old Republic, wrote Pillars of Eternity, Icewind Dale.
Yeah, Baldur's Gate was originally Beamdog.
No, that's the remake. Beamdog's the guy that remakes that stuff.
Oh, yeah, that is Enhanced Edition. Wikipedia, you fail me again.
Just look up Obsidian Entertainment.
You didn't pay that $3.
I didn't.
If you would have paid that $3, you would have got the proper Wikipedia. Not the crowdfunded Brickopedia.
Right.
Crowdsourced.
Oh, no. BioWare. Sorry.
Yeah, BioWare.
Wait.
BioWare developed Baldur's Gate. Interplay published it.
Okay, Interplay was the original. That's In Exile.
Yeah.
I think. Fuck, somebody's going to correct me on this. That's okay. I don't have a whole lot else. Did anybody... Oh, kind of going back to that, though. I think where that's a big deal, because they just did Pillars 2, right? And I feel like Pillars 2 is a really solid game. That's a game I'm trying to finish this year. All I hope is it doesn't get EA'd. And what I mean by that is kind of what EA took over BioWare, right? And made significant changes to some of their games and dumbed them down enough. And I'm hoping they just kind of let them do their own thing and just maybe just help them with production values and things like that rather than... Because what happened was... I mean, you look at the Dragon Age games. I'm a really big fan of the original Dragon Age game because it's a tactical RPG, really. You do the slow time thing, you set up your spells and your effects and your attacks, and you do it, right? Not the cleanest method, but it's like a revitalization of the original Baldur's Gate or any of those. And then you get to 2, which was really weird, and the story revolved around a town, and they didn't do so hot with it. And then they did 3, and the combat is so fucking dumbed down. Like, there's just nothing tactical about it. The story's not bad. It looks really good. It's done in Frostbite, but it's a really kind of a lackluster game, and I really want to like Dragon Age more. Like, I love the art style, I love all the design of everything, but I really don't enjoy the combat of that game at all. And I've gotten, like, every...
Yeah, but is that really EA's fault?
I mean, look at... If you like the Mass Effect series at all, I mean, Andromeda was... I know, Jason, you played the shit out of it, but on the
I would say the only thing EA has any problem with is probably wanting to get out before a quarter or something, or
shutting down a studio based on
$10 million into this. You need to release it
and then not finishing the fucking game. And I feel like the story suffered.
But the core game is coming from BioWare.
Yeah, but there's been enough changes with how things have been done in the last few years. Like, I mean, it's obviously, well, EA took over, and I feel like BioWare kind of took a dump. And I would only hope that with Obsidian, they give them enough leeway to do what they want, and the only thing they affect with them is budget.
Well, I mean, if you really want to look at it, look at what they've done with Mojang, or however you pronounce it.
Oh, yeah, I mean, Minecraft is like, still the same, it's just they keep expanding on it.
Right, they recently did that, or not too long ago, did that patch where you could be on a Switch, Xbox, and PC, and all be integrated into the same... World. Server.
I'm glad that they're
server
not being
world. Yeah, like
I'm glad they're not being stingy with that shit like Sony is right now.
That's a
failing on Sony's part, I feel like.
But Xbox did the same thing when they were leading the market, so
yeah, but I feel like that's one
it's
thing
just
that
come
Microsoft
to the forefront. It the only time it comes up is when there is a game that everybody wants to play, like Minecraft. You know, and not everybody can own every system like we do. So, you know, little Timmy in school wants to play with his buddy, little Johnny, and they can't play together because he has an Xbox and he has a PlayStation. I think Xbox has finally realized they can't longer do that.
Right.
They games are becoming so...
For example, they've got cross-play PC to Xbox on Gears 5 or Gears 4.
Yeah.
You know, you can play Horde mode with PC players.
I'd like to get back into some of that.
We need to play some Horde mode.
Yeah, it just so happens that, you know, Fortnite, the biggest game in the United States right now, is forcing Sony's hand a little bit more than, you know, would be normal. Like, you're probably hearing more now just because of that game versus if you, like, 2 years ago when somebody on Twitter just happens to make some snide comment about it, nobody cares.
That's fair.
There's some truth to that.
Yeah. I'm just hesitant of it. It's one of my favorite RPG companies, basically. And I feel like they do a very good job of telling stories, and I don't want to see it dumbed down.
Right.
And if they have to dumb down some things for the masses, I want to see that classic mode that lets me not dumb it down.
Think about it this way. If it makes you feel any better, Microsoft is definitely not EA. Microsoft has money.
EA has money,
but they're a little bit stingier with theirs. Like, you got to imagine Microsoft on the whole would not just be authorized to buy 13 companies by E3 and then add more at the end of the year.
Well, let's just say, like, Fallout now being one of the biggest franchises out there, which is weird that it ever is, just based on where that game came from, right? But I feel like 3 was a decent game, and then Obsidian took the next one after that as a side chapter, made a really fleshed out version of that game that really felt like a RPG. And they take it crazy places. Like, I mean, they had the Roman Legion as part of, like, the character, like, antagonist in the game. And you could do anything you wanted. I mean, you could be the bad guy, the good guy, the neutral guy, whatever you wanted to be.
Now, imagine all that with Microsoft's money and cloud backing and server backing and...
Well, imagine Pillars with Microsoft money instead of Kickstarter money.
Right.
If this happens, I mean, they're going to have 10 times the budget they ever had.
Right. It's right. It's always good to be hesitant, sure. But you've got to imagine it's only going to get better.
The ironic thing is there was a game they were putting out in 2012 that was being published by Microsoft, and they decided to cancel it at the last moment, and that's right, the reason that...
Phil Spencer wasn't running Xbox at the time.
Right, you know.
Look at who's running Xbox Studios and Xbox right now. Phil Spencer.
Well,
it's a completely different leadership
I will say that I do... I mean, I'm not a fan of everything, but just watching him in interviews, I know he does a lot of stuff with Giant Bomb. Like, you can tell the guy is somebody who plays games and is interested in gameplay.
He is a gamer. He's not just a business executive. He is a gamer.
And he talks with experience about a lot of the different games. You can tell that he's somebody who play tests this shit. You know, he's like, that's maybe not so good. Or, yeah, that's good, and that's good for the right reasons. Like, he has a passion that the previous leadership didn't have.
That's why you should be happy, because that means there's somebody there that is looking out to make a better game. I mean, everything that they've been doing with the streaming service, Google just recently did it. Like,
I'd just like to see Josh Sawyer with more money, because I feel like even though he is not at the forefront of design, he's at the forefront of the world building for the games that they do. And I feel like he does an excellent job of building fantasy or sci-fi, anything. And to see him with more money doing that stuff would be really awesome for me. He's like, if I'm a fanboy of designers, it really goes Fargo and then it goes Sawyer, even though that Sawyer's not technically a designer. I feel like he builds good worlds that video games work in.
Now, that said, all this conversation is great, but let's keep in mind this rumor was based on anonymous sources who spoke to Kotaku. So let's temper the discussion a little bit, though.
You can. I'm not saying it's gospel.
Yeah,
but something. The words Microsoft and Obsidian don't get spread around together very easily.
I know, but I won't get on my soapbox too hard. But I'm just saying that Kotaku and Jezebel are related. I mean, they are the tabloid news of video game journalism. I will say I am very opinionated about that. They've got a couple of decent writers.
I always do generally feel bad that I don't follow video gaming news. But at the end of the day, like, I just want to play a fucking video game. I know, it's not like a broken record.
No, dude, but I follow the news because we do this show. And
right, yeah.
Generally, most of what we follow is actually off Reddit.
Ancillarily, yeah. Like, I do follow the news, you know, because it is good to know what games are coming out, who's going where, and what's doing what. But you're saying Fargo and whatever this other guy's name is, and I'm like, I don't know.
I mean, I've been following these guys for 20 years.
Well, yeah.
I mean, back when I had that web design company, I was playing Fallout on my breaks on my computer up there.
I know, like, three people. Like, Hideo Kojima, Shigeru Miyamoto, and one random dude at Blizzard.
The godfathers of gaming.
Right, yeah. Godfathers. I know them. Like,
yeah.
Just make a good video game. Let me play it.
That said, there was also another rumor that Borderlands 3 is actually in localization.
Interesting. Hopefully it's not as bad as the last one.
Which would mean it's got to be at least close to beta status if they're actually re-recording the script in different languages, which is basically what localization is. So it might be further along than we thought, which I'd look forward to.
I mean, I'll play some Borderlands again.
I love Borderlands. Just hope
it's good.
That said, not much else on the news front.
Yeah, like I said, the three games that I think anybody that listens to us collectively we've been interested in: Red Dead for sure. I mean, there's a garnered interest amongst everybody, including Matt. Fallout for me, I'm just curious, right? I just hope it's not fucked up. And Assassin's Creed Odyssey, I do like the last one, and it seems like a little bit more of the same. So I'm kind of interested in seeing what that turns out to be. But I can't really think of anything off the cuff, aside from some indie games that I might end up liking a lot, that I won't talk about until I'm really through with them. So
I don't really need to finish playing Kentucky Route Zero. I played about 10 minutes of it. But that's not
fully released yet, is it?
Yeah.
They've got the last chapter still pending.
Oh, I don't know. It was free for me on Twitch, so I got Twitch Prime, so.
Wait for the last chapter. There's Cardboard Games or something like that that makes that game. They've got a final chapter that's been pending. It's been in development for like 5 or 6 years recently. So I tend to go through the games that I have that are unfinished on Steam and check regular news to see what's going on. I don't typically buy unfinished games anymore. But now, with that being said, because I want to see when it's going to release first, that game was, I've got all the way through what's there. All the way through the rights, there is a really good adventure game that goes really surreal after a little while. So I think it's worth your time. But
I know. Check it out. Really good.
The art style turned me off initially, and then I just got into it.
Well, that's the reason why I wanted to play it. I think I'm at that point where if a AAA game comes with just a great story, that's just a bonus. But if I really want a good, in-depth, meaty game that makes me think or anything, like, I would want to... I hope I can find a game like...
Kentucky Route Zero.
Yeah.
That's that game.
Yeah, and that's what I want, you know, to break away from the Final Fantasy storytelling and the World of Warcraft storytelling and the Spider-Man storytelling. Like, I want something a little different. I loved Lost. This gives me a little bit of a Lost feel. Like, there's something mystical that nobody knows anything about. Oh,
it certainly goes places.
Yeah, and I want that. I just need to break away from those stupid MMOs, man.
Out of everything we've mentioned tonight, that is very much the most surreal and handcrafted game I can think of.
It looks beautiful. It played great. Just
great soundtrack, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the fifth episode is still pending. And that's the final one.
So with that, I don't really have anything else. Jason, do you have anything?
Nope.
Where can you find us?
Find us at tiltcast.com. Find us on Facebook and Twitter.com/tiltcast. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/realtiltcast. and search for us on iTunes.
And if you guys want, when you're following us on Twitter, if you'll post something, you hear us talking about a game, I'll stream it while I play it. I play a lot of games by myself, just dicking around in the middle of the night. If you want me to do that, I'll post a link and I'll record it on OBS and just stream it. So if you guys are interested in it, just hit up the Twitter. Find friends of the show. So you know that Trent, if you listen long enough, is also a core member in the background. He runs a YouTube channel for Cabbage KBG. And it's let's plays basically of games. He doesn't do it that often, but he's got a few up there and they're pretty interesting. Playing Trent games, which means weird ass games. Zero Time Dilemma, I think, was one of the ones that he somewhat recently posted. Find other friends of the show. We're talking about John a lot from Carousel. Carousel's still running strong. So Carousel podcast.com. We have other friends of the show. We've got For the Love of Gaming, which has supported us for an extremely long time and has had a long-running show. You have noquarters.net. You have bmfcast.com and tvgp.tv. They still play Binding of Isaac. With that, it's the end of the damn show.
All right.
Yay. Peace.